Okay, good morning. Welcome to Stock Market Strategies on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Ed Handley, Certified Financial Planner, Senior Vice President Investments, Fulcrum Securities, LLC, and Portfolio Manager. Fulcrum Securities is a member of FINRA SIPC. We clear through Pershing LLC, a subsidiary Bank of New York Mellon, member of the New York Stock Exchange. This program will focus on strategies for the financial markets with an emphasis on technical analysis and macroeconomics. We are a live call-in show, and we'll take your questions this morning. Your call-in numbers are 202-465-3080. I repeat, 202-465-3080. The programs are streamed to www.federalnewsradio.com. Click on Listen, select the format. The programs are also archived. You click on Shows, scroll down a bit to the right for Weekend, and then my banner will pop up, Stock Market Strategies. I manage money for institution retail accounts, use a combination of stocks, bonds, ETFs, mortgage pools, currencies, structured products, longs and shorts, almost any hedge that I can get. I employ top-down analysis and a tactical, not strategic allocation. Also run the Fulcrum Fee Program. My email, and you may obtain additional information on that by checking out my website at www.edhandley.com, and also various products from time to time. My email address is edh, that's edh, at fulcrumsecurities.com. Telephone numbers during business hours, obviously not this morning, please, 866-689-4001. Please remember the opinions and views expressed during the broadcast are not to be considered specific recommendations. Individual investors' decision should only be made after considering one's own circumstances, including tolerance or risk. Investors should consider including fundamental, quantitative, and technical analysis before making final investment decisions. Caveat emptor. Okay, let's take a little week in review and see where we are and what is ongoing in the world and what may influence your investment decisions. First of all, if we take a look at the S&P, my favorite index, by the way, a lot of action in this. If we go back and look at where we closed on Friday, about 15-18, and we go back and we look at the beginning of the month, we were at around 15-15. Unchanged. Since the markets are closed on Monday, the 18th, we will begin trading on the 19th, which means for about 19 days in the month of February, nothing has really happened. Yes, it has. The game has changed. The index may be stuck, but the game is changing. If we go back and look at the various sectors over the last six trading days, there's not a lot that really stands out as to what is occurring. You would see some weakness in utilities. You'll see spotty performance in consumer discretionary, staples, technology, energy. Industrials are a little bit stronger, and financials are stronger. The two sectors that you will see that will stand out, actually I'll include three. Utilities on the weaker side, healthcare on the weaker side, financials on the stronger side. The rest pretty much stuck in the middle. Now, Friday was a very interesting day. I often tell my clients the two most important portions of the day, and please, whatever you do, don't try to avoid calling me at this particular time, because I really try to concentrate very hard to read the market. That's at the open between about 9:30 and 9:50. And at the close, particularly the last 20 minutes, of the close. What is really even more interesting is the last 10 minutes on a Friday. You will often find that you will get an action in the market on early Friday, then you drone for the entire day, and you get action in the last 20 minutes. We did so this past Friday. It is particularly interesting considering that it's a three-day weekend and it's the end of the Chinese New Year celebration, whereas basically their market was closed. What I really noticed Friday was in the last 20 seconds of trading. Within the last 10 seconds of trading, the Dow went from about a minus 7 or 8 points to a plus 8. The S&P minus 2 to 3 to a minus 1. There was a huge buy program executed within the last 10 to 15 seconds of trading in the market on Friday. So unless I'm reading this incorrectly, to me, on Tuesday, when we crank back up, I'm looking for a break of the market to the upside based upon that buy program. When you can move the indices that much on an option expiration day, which is what it was, and you combine that with the action in the last 15 seconds, it portends of a future follow-through on a Monday. Now, I may be reading this incorrectly. It may be all related to the option programs to drive a lot of the stocks to the strikes to execute assignments. But it certainly looked encouraging for the market on Tuesday. So we shall see. So if you have the opportunity on Tuesday at the open, see how the market performs. Now, as I mentioned, there's option expiration. So quite often what you will get is driving the stock to the strikes in order to enhance the value of the outstanding options. We shall see. All right, there are some more macro side notes. One stock, not a recommendation to you, that I'm particularly interested in is Barrick Gold. This is looking like it's setting up for a huge reversal. I would not be surprised to be able to tack on 8 or 9 points on this issue. I'd use a tight stop because the gold is under a lot of pressure in this market. You could be wrong. So tight stop, maximum upside potential, Barrick Gold. Not a recommendation, but a hint. There are some other things that are extremely important. What's the backdrop that we're getting? We're seeing huge inside selling. Various publications are reporting these. And what you're seeing is that this is one of the all-time highs on corporate inside sales. Mr. Schmidt of Google, I believe it is, unloaded $2 billion, that's with a B, dollars worth of stock last week. That's forewarning. We are also seeing that mutual funds have historic low cash levels, something in the neighborhood of 3 to 4% cash. At the same time, we're seeing the individual investor rotate from the bond funds, mutual funds, into the stock mutual funds. Actually, it's really not that much of a rotation as it is the commitment of new money to the stock mutual funds. We are also seeing margin debt approaching or at the levels that they were at the top of 2007 and the top of 2000. These are huge macro forces signaling that the advance in this market from March of 2009 may be drawing to a close. You generally get those type of indications when the market is topping. But as of yet, the advanced decline line is not signaling, which it generally does, a number of months before a top. And the advanced decline line is not yet signaling that we are there. So it is on guard. What is fueling all of this and what is causing it? Well, there's some interesting quotes. Jim Rogers states that we should be wary of what the government is doing around the world is doing. That is printing huge sums of money and spending huge amounts of money. His belief is that the debts are going up like a rocket. He is the author of the book Street Smarts, Adventures on the Road and in the Markets. He said the central banks across the world are matching each other virtually, ease for ease. He says the U.S. Central Bank has been printing staggering amounts of money, and the U.S. government has been spending staggering amounts of money to help Mr. Obama get reelected. He said, and the Fed easing continues. And as long as the printing press is on full run, which he says that Bernanke says he's going to keep until 2000 and 2014, 2015, you can expect more of the same. If you plot out a chart of the central bank assets from the middle of June until the end of 2012, you would be astonished at what is going on, both from the Federal Reserve, the Bank of England, the ECB, the Bank of Japan, and Swiss National Bank. All governments, domestic and foreign, were in bad shape, according to Mr. Rogers. It's only because, and the market is going up only because the debt has much more than doubled in the last 4 years, and they're still printing money. Mr. Rogers states that no country in the world history has improved itself by raising taxes, which we are doing. If you cut taxes and you cut spending, then people will do a better job. I may note that you may take caution here because Mr. Rogers has been an advocate of the commodity market for a number of years, and that has not been one of the stellar places to be. Right now, combined portfolios of five leading central banks has nearly tripled to $10 trillion. That was $3.5 trillion 6 years ago. So we get a hint as to what is fueling the equity purchases. As long as they continue to print more and the market behaves in an orderly fashion, we're okay. But when they stop, we're going to have a problem. That is for sure. Generally speaking, the size of central bank portfolios is an indication of the amount of high-powered currency that's been injected into the global banking system. Now, the banks can use these monies to lend to borrowers. They can create more currency in the economy. They can channel money to buy corporate or sovereign bonds. Hedge funds can get cheap money. Equities can rise because of the flow of money to the equity market. The European Central Bank, that's the ECB, is the biggest lender. Portfolio is a little bit less than 3 trillion euros worth of loans. They call those repos. And they own less than 2 billion euros in sovereign bond. The Fed, ours, owns 3 trillion of mortgages and T-bonds. And the Bank of Japan is holding 160 trillion yen in government bonds. Bank of England owns 375 billion pounds of British gilts. Swiss National Bank has injected 427 billion Swiss francs into the currency market for swapping euros to keep the value of the Swiss currency down relative to the euro, which is an important thing to them. So as you see, it's not the report so much of earnings and revenues and da-da-da-da-da that is going on in the marketplace. It is the flow of the Forex market and the currency and who is going to print more in order to weaken their currency against another currency. The broader group of 20 of the financial chiefs and the chief bankers that oversee maybe 90% of the world's economy, they're in Moscow this weekend. High on the agenda will be the new buzzword in the marketplace, currency wars, which is moved to the front by the evidence that's offered up recently by the Japanese government. Countries large and small are vying to position their currencies to make their exports more attractive. Last week, ECB chief Mario Draghi broke with the tradition of silence by commenting on the European exchange rate, suggesting that he is waiting to see if the euro will rally above $1.35 to the euro. That seems to be the line in the sand. The Fed and the Bank of Japan are increasing the supply of yen and the U.S. dollars. The supply of euro is actually shrinking. Hence, the Japanese yen and the U.S. buck should weaken against the euro. Since July, the Eurozone banks have repaid about 250 billion euros to the ECB. That's the first tranche of the 490 billion long-term repos. That's the LTROs. On the end of the month, this month, they'll have the opportunity for an early repayment of the second tranche of three-year LTROs and are expected to pay back about 125 billion euros. That means there's less euro liquidity in the banking system. In other words, the payback of the three-year to the ECB represents the form of tightening of monetary conditions. As such, you would expect the euro currency to certainly increase relative to the Japanese yen and to a greater extent against the yen and also against the dollar. Stronger euro, you could get more damage in the eurozone exports. Now, Eurostat, which is the EU's statistical office, said this past Thursday that the 17-nation eurozone economy shrank by 0.6% from the previous three-month period. That's the biggest fall since 2009 when we bottomed, when the global economy was in its deepest recession since World War II and the markets were cratering. It relatively is the same. So why is the market moving up if we have these backdrop of economic conditions? It's the printing of the money, and it has to find a home. The eurozone economy has now contracted for three straight quarters. That's a recession, yet the market continues to rise. The German economy shrank 0.6% in the fourth quarter's demand for the exports fell. France, the second biggest economy in the eurozone, also saw output drop by 0.3%. In total, the Eurostat figures that seven Eurozone countries are in recession. Greece, Spain, Italy, Cyprus, the Netherlands, Portugal, and Finland. And the Northern Zone is probably a little less debt, better managed than the Southern Zone. So what's the outlook for the Euro? Higher. Because it is still relatively higher in terms of strength than the dollar and the yen. The British economy shrank by 0.3% in the fourth quarter. That left the country on the brink of an unprecedented triple-dip recession. Compared to the fourth quarter of 2011, British GDP was unchanged. We have an anemic British economy. Yet, the London FTSE 100 moved above 6,000 level for the first time in 17 months, led by banking and oil companies. Now, one of the major side effects of the QE is a complete disconnect between anemic economies and booming stock prices as traders buy equities as a hedge against monetary conditions. The Bank of England's £375 billion QE scheme, similar to the Fed's, has benefited the market. QE has boosted the value of the London listed stocks and bonds by approximately $1 trillion. Here in the U.S., the economic output shrank 0.1% in Q4, and nobody cared. Buffett does. He's still bullish on America. He says it's the least bad market. Average cost of gasoline in the United States is about $3.70 a gallon. Rule of thumb is that for every 1 cent increase at the pump, it shaves $1+ billion from consumer spending. So the 30-cent increase in gasoline at the pump over the last 6 weeks is roughly to $35 billion in consumer spending. At the same time, the consumer is being hit by a fairly large tax increase. And at the same time, we have sequestration occurring, the beginning in about 2 weeks, which is going to trim $85 billion off of government spending. And the market continues to move up. Why? We're printing more dollars. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said that the $85 billion in automatic spending cuts will likely go into effect on March the 1st. There is literally no alternative. Now, the Democratic leadership is working on a short-term replacement for the sequester that would be a mix of spending cuts and, guess what, more tax increases. I don't think that's going to fly through the Republicans because they just did a tax increase. Republicans see this as the only way to impose cuts on Washington spending and contend that it was President Obama's idea to include the sequester in the 2011 deal to raise the debt ceiling, and that he has failed to provide a plan to replace the automatic $85 billion in cuts set for March the 1st. The Republicans say they have kept the commitment. They have raised the taxes. The Democrats are not adhering to the deal on the debt ceiling increase, and hence, bring it on. The tax issue is over, according to McConnell. It is now about the spending cuts. And the Democrats want to raise the taxes again. Liberal Democrats, Tom Harkin, doesn't like the idea. First of all, I want to disagree with those who say we have a spending problem. We've heard that before. So the U.S. credit rating on February the 15th, Friday, the Treasury Department said that foreign holdings of U.S. Treasury bills and notes hit a record $5.55 trillion, which is roughly half of the outstanding marketable debt. Of course, that does not include $5.5 trillion of Social Security and Medicare. It's up from $983 billion held in 2001. China's a top holder. They increased their holdings to $1.2 trillion. Japan has $1.12 trillion. England is also very high. Demand kept rising in December. Congress agreed to raise the government's $16.4 trillion borrowing limit. So it is out there. Dick Bovee, he's a pretty crafty, smart guy, is worried about the value of the greenback in terms of its world currency. Mr. Bovee believes that it will be defrocked and may occur in as short a period as 5 to 10 years, and that the greenback is declining as a percent of the world's currency. Compared with its peers, it's dropped to a 15-year low. U.S. dollar share of global money supplies plunged from 90% in 1952 to approximately 15%. If the dollar loses status as the world's most reliable currency, the United States will lose the right to print money to pay its debt, Bovee wrote. It'll be forced to pay the debt, and that could be catastrophic on the economy. The Fed's QE policy could have the side effect of causing the dollar to lose its reserve currency. You always have to be careful of the law of unintended consequences. We are moving into grounds that we have never, ever seen. The massive printing of money throughout the world to monetize the debt in order to keep spending the money in order to keep the economies afloat. The backbones of the economy are all in recession. The only thing that is preventing a reaction within the market that signals a deep recession is the continual printing of the money. What happens if you have to stop doing that? We probably are going to find out. So China and Japan are the chief financiers of the U.S. Treasury debt, along with England. They intervene in the exchange market. They print yuan and yen and exchange the currencies for dollars, take the dollars and buy the treasury notes. So in fact, China and Japan have monetized about 25% of the marketable debt. For years, the rule is simple. The yield on Japan and the U.S. Treasury 10-year have traveled hand in hand. But now, the 10-year T-note yield is 2% plus, up from a historic low of 1.35%. while the Japanese yield is 0.75%, stuck and probably going lower. The dollar yen, last point, has risen from 78 yen in mid to November to about 93.94. Japan wants to fuel inflation to get it up to about 2%. They can do that, hopefully, by pumping more yen into the world economy. Their 10-year bond yield has only edged 4 basis points higher to about 0.75 today. while they've taken the yen from 78 to 93. So the U.S. dollar position at 93, 94 today should be closer to 1.1, 35 beeps higher. It is not. So if Tokyo can keep the yields low and keep printing the yen to devalue the yen against the dollar, they're going to help their exports and help to create the 2% inflation that they want. That's what's occurring. There's a big meeting in Moscow this weekend. I'm sure that's going to be a topic. Personally, I kind of think that you're going to see the yen north of 100, maybe 125. Now, not a recommendation. There is a way to play that. And it's an ETF called the YCS. That's the Yankee Charlie Sam. It is double the inverse yen. That is, as the yen strength falls, the ETF rises. Or as the yen to dollar rises, the ETF rises at a times two rate, adjusted for the sloppiness in these double ETFs. So there's a complete disconnect between the anemic U.S. economy and the booming stock market. What are we looking for the U.S. this year? Maybe 1.5% GDP if we're lucky. Take the words in stride. Hope you have a good weekend. It's going to be an exciting time over the next few weeks. Please, investors should consider including fundamental, quantitative, and technical analysis before making final investment decisions. Be careful out there, and we'll talk to you next week. You're listening to Stock Market Strategies. I'm Ed Handley.